Is intelligent design religious? And is evolution scientific? Or is it the other way around?
Millions of scientists believe in evolution. Are they all wrong?
Can life come from non-life as evolutionists believe? This is Bob Boyd.
And Jerry Boyd.
Welcome to Issues in Education.
Evolution has been enshrined as the centerpiece of our educational system with legal walls that are built up to protect it.
Has evolution become America's state religion?
Our guest is a medical doctor and author, Dr. Carl Werner, author of Evolution, The Grand Experiment, and his new book is Living Fossils. These are two really beautifully illustrated books with full-color photos and glossy hardback books. Dr. Carl Werner received his doctorate in medicine at age 23. That is amazing.
Yes, I had an opportunity to go to a six-year school, and I started at age 17, so I graduated at the ripe age of 23 from medical school. I was a doctor at age 23.
Unbelievable. So did you actually practice?
I am a practicing physician full-time and a science author full-time.
Amazing. Well, I've never met a doctor that became a doctor at 23 in my whole life, so you're a first.
I don't think I'd want him operating on my brain at age... All right. Dr. Carl Werner, were you an evolutionist?
Absolutely.
What changed your mind?
I started out in, I'll tell you what, I grew up in parochial schools and we were taught Bible stories. But once I got to college, my teachers then started to tell me, hey, evolution's true and this is the evidence. And I swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. I had no reason to believe at age 17 that these guys weren't informed. I went on that route of believing in evolution stronger and stronger. Then my sophomore, junior year of medical school, a friend challenged me and said, hey, Carl, have you thought about this problem with physics, with evolution? I was like, what are you talking about? And so I then took on this grand experiment of my life starting at age 19. And then that's where I've been for the last 30 years.
Well, when did you have a turning point?
When this friend of mine in medical school challenged me, I had never heard those ideas. And his ideas seemed so plausible. I hadn't even considered these ideas that were in other areas of science outside of evolution classroom that were in opposition to the theory of evolution.
Well, that's interesting you put it that way, because there are those who say that God guided the process of evolution. They put the two together.
I think that's chicken to get on one side or the other. Evolution is true or it's not true. Either believe it or don't believe it.
What you said was profound, though. Your friend threw out questions that basically radically altered your way of thinking, your worldview. And it's just a shame that not every science teacher in the public schools could have those questions and just throw those out to every student and let the student think for themselves, because look how what it did to your life.
It wrecked your idea of evolution.
Totally wrecked it, and it wrecked it because they were so clear to me. I'd studied these other areas because I was unnerved by these questions, because all of a sudden I go, whoa, am I going to have to rethink this whole approach to life I've taken? If you don't mind, I would like to pose these questions to you or to your audience just as they were posed to me.
Yeah.
I'd like to give you these questions.
Give them.
His first question he asked me is, Carl, if scientists have collected hundreds of millions of fossils, which they have, the number right now is over 200 million fossils collected in the museums, why are there missing links at all? Why can't we see evolution of every animal more or less in the museums? Have you ever seen a display of T-Rex evolution? No. Have you ever seen a trilobite evolution? No. Have you ever seen a display of bluegill evolution? No. He says, how could that be if you've collected so many fossils? How could you blame it on a lack of data when you have a fifth of a billion fossils cataloged? And I was like, whoa. To be honest with you, I went home that night and just thought and thought and thought, and I was scientifically unnerved by his questions.
Wow, just think about that, though. 200 million fossils have been collected. Maybe that's not enough, Carl. Maybe we need just a few more. The next one should do it, right?
You know, and Darwin said the reason he didn't have them was because he only had a few fossils. And that was true back then in 1859. There was only a few museums, a few fossils, their private collections. But when you get to 10 million, 20 million, 50 million, 100 million, 200 million, and actually I think the number's closer to 500 million, but I'm not going to say that publicly as official, but when you get to 200 million fossils, you have to ask, okay, when would we ever say we have enough to say this doesn't work?
I was just thinking about some of the ideas in the 1800s when Darwin posed his evolution theory. In the 1800s, people believed the moon was populated by furry-winged people, and they believed that apes became people. All these other ideas, and you brought some up in your book that are fascinating, that mice came from underwear through spontaneous generation. Why was it all these ideas stayed in the 1800s, but why is it evolution survived all these other ideas?
Well, you know, the ideas that you're talking about, that mice came from dirty underwear, snakes came from the watering trough where the horses drink, from the horse's hair falling into water, these ideas were believed, and seemingly the scientists all bought into it.
They believed that diseases were treated with open windows, fresh air. If you had a broken leg, it was just cut off. It was amputated. They didn't know much about blood transfusions either, because if you needed a transfusion, they gave you dog blood or cow blood, and of course the people died. But that was the science of that day.
Yes, there was a scientist named Louis Pasteur who came on the scene in 1859 and disproved most of the ideas you're talking about, these ideas, where does disease come from? He came up with the germ theory. He disproved the idea of spontaneous generation of life coming from non-life through a series of just simple but eloquent experiments. He is probably the smartest scientist of the 19th century, and it's a shame because he's kind of got pushed to the back. Darwin has been put to the top of the pedestal, and somehow this man that came up with the germ theory that we all depend on for antisepsis, for surgery, Louis Pasteur, he somehow has not got the credit he deserves.
Describe this idea that pond scum can come from clean pond water.
One of the proofs that life came from non-life, go to your pond and get a clear jar and put some pond water in it. It looks clear initially, okay? And then you set it out in the sun, and 2 weeks later, it becomes green scum and cloudy. And the scientists could look in this water and see the bacteria in the water, and they would say, oh, look, bacteria came out of the clean water spontaneously. So bacteria form spontaneously. But Louis Pasteur said, no, wait a minute, those bacteria were already in there. So he boiled the water and sealed it from air and could show that once you start out with sterile water, bacteria just don't form naturally. Bacteria only come from other bacteria. There's no spontaneous generation of the start of life, as was believed for years.
And what about the idea that maggots came from rotting meat? Describe that experiment.
You take a small piece of raw meat, put it outside. If you come back 2 weeks later, there'll be maggots underneath it. And the scientists in the past incorrectly thought that that proved that maggots came from meat. Life came from dead meat. Italian scientists that came along and said, no, wait a minute. These maggots were from the flies landing on the meat. Flies came and landed on the dead meat. They laid their eggs on the meat. The fly eggs then became maggots, the larval stage of flies. If you watch a maggot over time, a baby fly will come out of it and fly off. So all he did was do the same experiment, but he put a piece of cheesecloth over the meat. The meat was allowed to sit out in the sun. The air was there, but the flies couldn't get to it. And 3 or 4 weeks later, he came out, no maggots. And he said, oh, maggots didn't come from the meat. The maggots came from the flies. It's so simple now in retrospect. But again, you have to want to scrutinize an idea to disprove it. If you don't want to scrutinize it, you'll never disprove it.
It's so obvious to us looking back.
Yeah, coming up with ideas that are countercultural, the painful thing for the person that presents them, because the scientists don't want their ideas that they believed all their life were actually wrong. Darwin believed that bacteria came from water, just like pre-Pasteur people did. But if you say, well, look, this doesn't work today, how in the world would you get a bacteria to form, like the theory of evolution would say, forming out of sterile water? The scientists that support it would say, hey, we don't know. It happened a long time ago in conditions we can't recreate. There's no way to know how this could have ever happened. So we can't show you how it happened, but it happened. You're just going to have to believe this one on faith.
And that's amazing that that's exclusively taught in public schools.
With none of the critiques of the ideas, because I'm just giving you the beginner's problems.
Here's another kooky one. Darwin incorrectly thought that enlarged muscles from exercise would be passed on to the next generation. If some dad worked out really hard, then his kids would have big muscles. It's incredible some of the crazy stuff that they believed.
This is Darwin's idea, that getting big muscle, that his child and his grandchild would be born with big muscles. Now, you know, that's ridiculous. Jerry, if you suntanned a lot as a young woman and got a really dark skin, that your baby would be born with darker skin because of that. those ideas just don't work. Nothing you do to your outside cells, like your muscles or your skin, that doesn't affect your reproductive cells. Nothing you do to your body is passed on to the next generation. Darwin, the author of the theory of evolution, didn't understand DNA. He didn't understand traits, how they're passed on. Making big muscles doesn't affect your offspring.
Scientists in the 1800s believed that a horse could develop a long neck by stretching its neck to eat.
That's how Darwin thought evolution occurred. But the problem is there is no connection between the neck muscles and the reproductive cells. Those ideas were completely false, but he built his theory around this idea that changes that occur in your body are passed on to the next generation, and it turned out to be a fallacy.
And one way they showed that was by cutting the tails off of mice. For 20 generations, they would cut the tails off these poor little mice, and they thought that sooner or later, a mouse would be born without a tail. But no matter how many tails were cut off, baby mice always were born with a tail.
Okay, after Darwin died, August Weissmann said, I'm going to try to prove this idea of Darwin correct or incorrect. He did this 20 generations, cut off all the tails.
Aww.
And it's a little gross.
Sadistic,
you know?
Yeah.
It was to prove the point, the whole mechanism of Darwin's idea of how animals change got gutted. But if we believe in evolution, we don't have to be deterred by this. We'll come up with other ideas of how animals are going to change.
Did Darwin actually believe that a bear could shed its back legs in order to evolve into a whale?
Absolutely. Darwin wrote in the first edition of The Origin of Species, it got cut in the later editions, he envisioned a whale came about by a black bear swimming in the water for long periods of time, not needing its back legs as much, and eventually a black bear evolving into a whale. Darwin believed this. It's in the first edition. The people reacted so violently to scientific cohorts. They said, that is ridiculous, Charles, that you believe that a black bear evolved into a whale. Oh, yeah, I believe this. By him being in the water and not needing his back legs, they'll go away, and he'll eventually get a blowhole on the top of his head, and his hair will go away. He eventually had to somewhat recant the idea because of pressures from the other scientists in London.
He's talking about not the bear in the water, but the bear's offspring eventually evolving, right?
That's right. Over generations, if the bear was swimming and didn't use his back legs quite as much, that the baby bear, the next generation, would have smaller back legs. And that one would swim in the water, not use his back legs as much, not need his hair as much. And the next baby offspring would have smaller back legs, have less hair, and that eventually you would get a whale out of a black bear. He thought this is one example of how evolution would occur.
Yeah, but how much different is this than the current evolutionists that still think a whale evolves from either a hyena or a cat? What's the difference?
Evolution theory would still say that you have to come up with some predecessor for a whale. So they changed it from a black bear. Currently it's a hyena at one museum, and currently it's a cat at another museum, and currently it's a hippopotamus in the Japanese museums. But they still have this idea that a ground mammal became a whale. But the difference between Darwin's idea and today is, today it all occurred by a series of chance mutations, not as an adaptation, but by a mistake in the DNA over and over and over and over. Well, let's say a hyena, until the hyena lost his back legs, till his front legs became front flippers, till the nose accidentally moved up to the top of the head and connected directly to the lungs to make a blowhole, and that all of these changes didn't occur by some need to change, but by accidental mutations.
The cat or the hyena would have to lose their teeth, and they'd have to develop a fine filter called baleen for filtering plankton out of the ocean. Look at what these people have to believe. I mean, talk about faith. This is a fairy tale.
It is a huge amount of faith. I didn't realize that evolution was an exercise of faith. I always thought creation was the exercise of faith. But think about that. A cat's teeth or a hyena's teeth becoming a baleen filter. I don't know if you've ever seen one. It looks like a big, huge 15-foot comb for collecting the crustaceans. It's incredible. There's no teeth left. There's just this baleen bone and filter. And that came about by an accident.
And then you had an amazing factual detail of the blue whale. It's possibly the largest animal to ever have lived. It's 100 feet long. Its tongue is about the size of a full-grown African elephant, and its heart the size of a small car, and the blood vessels are so large a human could swim through them. Could a whale evolve by chance? And we're talking the hyena's body would have to increase in size from 150 pounds to 360,000 pounds. And so a hyena to a whale. I'm sorry.
That's a whale of a thing.
So the audience doesn't miss this. A 150-pound hyena evolved into a 360,000-pound aquatic mammal by chance.
Yeah, 100 feet long. I mean, that's huge. Even the tongue, like Jerry said, is the size of a full-grown African elephant.
That is huge. And it had to occur by chance, Bob. Couldn't be because it needed a bigger tongue. It had to occur by just some genetic bad mutation or accidental mutation.
Amazes me how people can believe this, but secular intellectual folks try to make it seem like Christians are simple people, country-like folk that believe God created things. But yet here these people believe that sea lions evolved from a dog or a bear. Look at the absurd extent people will go to try to make evolution and not God, the creator.
And they believe these ideas, but if you really pin them down and interview them, do you really have animals halfway between a dog and a sea lion or halfway between a skunk and a seal? I mean, do you really have these animals? Well, no. Well, why do you believe this? You know, they have all these, you know, this bone's kind of the same and this idea. It becomes an idea of faith, and you know what? You could stand back and kind of laugh at these ideas. These are laughable ideas.
You imagine if evolution were true and these little pussycats are giving birth to whales and dinosaurs. I mean, this would be a crazy world, wouldn't it?
Well, that's reverse evolution, and you don't realize the cats actually evolved from the whales.
So Trixie's mother's a whale, right?
Oh, great blue whale.
That's not very scientific because, as you said, spontaneous generation was disproven in the 1800s. Then the question naturally becomes, why should the origin of life then from chemicals be taught as a fact, even though it doesn't happen, never has happened, never will happen?
It has never been shown, but this is the basis of evolution, that life started from non-life. It's the first step, according to the theory of evolution. And this first step is unquestionably been shown not to be true. I would just ask any scientist that's listening, any PhD, any biochemist, please show me a protein forming out of sterile water. I just to hear how you're going to explain this, because no other biochemist would ever say even a protein, much less a whole bacteria, form out of sterile water. Right from the get-go, you have a problem that shouldn't be if the theory of evolution is true.
But hasn't the public really been they believe a lie. They believe that life does come from non-life.
Yes, PBS shows and a lot of the news articles where they kept reporting, oh, well, this is probably the beginning. If we can just have a little more time, we'll figure out how life started and how a protein formed. The articles themselves, just like the newspaper articles today about evolution, were very misleading. If you read it as a non-scientist, you'd say, oh, they proved that life started from non-life. Here we go. Here's the proof we've been waiting for.
There's a lot of fraud going on here, and your bird evolution and feathered dinosaurs was fascinating.
The theory of evolution says that birds came from dinosaurs, okay? So they've always been looking for this missing link. And National Geographic reported that they had found an animal with a dinosaur tail and a bird's body. They printed a 7-page article about it. They said it was a missing link between the dinosaurs and the birds, but another scientist had taken this specimen that was printed in National Geographic and CAT scan it. This is Dr. Rowe from the University of Texas. And he CAT scan, he said, wait a minute, someone has stuck a dinosaur tail onto a bird's body, mortared them together, painted them so you couldn't see the cracks, and falsified a dinosaur bird, a flying dinosaur, whatever you want to call it. But the most amazing thing about this whole story, not that there was a fraud, but the most amazing part of the story was that this CAT scan was done before National Geographic went to print. Dr. Rowe told the scientist from National Geographic that this was a big fraud, and they printed it anyway, and they held a press conference anyway saying that it was a true thing. When you go ahead with an idea and you know it's wrong and you're not going to tell anybody, you're going to tell them the opposite. This is the perfect specimen to prove bird evolution.
It sounds like they don't really have any evidence.
That's very insightful, because if you have 200 million fossils, you don't need to come up with anything that's fraud. Not only here, but in other stories, putting a whale's tail onto a four-legged animal and calling it a walking whale. There's another fraud, fraud, another fraud. These were the major news stories of the day, only later to be retracted in small statements in the back of the papers. Oh, this turned out to be not true. Small, small story. Nobody catches that part of it.
Think of all the school children who were persuaded out of their belief in God and who are now disbelievers, atheists, really, because evolution, I think, leads to atheism. And all of these people were deceived. They were tricked by fraudulent evidence.
That's true, but false ideas, misrepresentative ideas, all shown to be not true, have misled a whole generation. Picture those charts, apes, small apes, stoop down, half ape, stand up, and each one of those was disproven to be either apes or human beings. There's something nauseating about that as a scientist, that people are being fed information that's disproved, and yet nobody's going back to pick up the pieces and say, hey, guys, all that was wrong about Australopithecus or Neanderthal or whatever.
We live in a time when there are only really two religions competing for the minds, hearts, and loyalties of men. One of those religions is evolution. Yes, evolution is a religion. Kids in public schools are not told that these drawings, these pictures, are all made up by some artist who wants to prove a point with a preconceived idea that evolution is true.
That's right. If you go to a museum today, like a Milwaukee Public Museum, you'll see a reconstructed model of the bird Archaeopteryx. It's supposed to be half dinosaur, half bird. The whole head is scaly, okay? And you say, there's no bird today that has a scaly head like this. It must be a half dinosaur. So I had to fly to Germany, and I interviewed the scientist who did the dissections of the fossils of Archaeopteryx. His name is Peter Wellenhofer. And I said, Dr. Wellenhofer, is this model correct? What is here in the Milwaukee Public Museum was a scaly head, a reptilian head. He said, oh no, Carl, that's not true. We have never found scales on the head. I was like, wait a minute, what are you saying? You're saying that this artist in the Milwaukee Public Museum put scales on there, but you've never found scales? No, Carl, we've never found scales on the head. This artist did what he thought the evolution model should show. Debbie and I traveled up to University of Michigan and interviewed the scientist who had this display of a hyena evolving into a whale. And I asked him on camera, with cameras rolling, Dr. Gingrich, your picture shows an animal with four legs and a whale's tail. This is believed by most to be the best evidence for evolution of whales evolving from a land animal. But your fossils don't show this. How do you know this is to be true? And he said, with the cameras rolling, I don't believe it's true. And he said that he speculated, put the whale's tail onto this animal. And this is considered to be the best proof of evolution by one of the greatest evolution scientists in the world, Dr. Kevin Padian. And yet when I go to look at the source fossil, I realize it was speculated. It was made up. Now, I was only at this museum for 6 hours. We got this. It didn't take a lot to sort this out.
This is why it's so sad. As a little school kid doesn't have the time, he doesn't have the resources to go check this stuff out. He's told by his teacher, and he's told by the textbooks that all the scientists believe in evolution, and there's so much overwhelming proof for it.
How do they believe in evolution if there is no missing link and there is no transitional species? Why don't we see apes still evolving into humans, or why do we still see apes then? There shouldn't even be apes if, you know, either way you look at it.
Yes, and they would say you're a simpleton. The people who question evolution are always going to be less than academic.
You know, you wonder, why would an animal want to evolve half a limb? It wouldn't do any good. Why would an animal want to evolve? There's no reason for being a transition species. It would just cause them to be eaten.
That's right. Evolving into another animal, which has never been shown to occur, would put you at more risk. If you're growing a leg for the first time and you've got a half leg or half of a wing, it doesn't work. It's just going to slow you down. You would be at more risk. You would be eaten. And so any of these in-between steps would cause you to be destroyed. You wouldn't evolve. You would die off. What do you do on the in-between stage when you only have a half of a wing or a half of a leg or a half of an eye that doesn't work, when it causes you to be more vulnerable? There's no evidence, no facts. And you start going through them one at a time. Big Bang, doesn't work. Origin of life from water, doesn't work. The fossil record of whales, doesn't work. Fossil record of birds evolving from dinosaurs, doesn't work. And all of a sudden, someone puts it all together and says, wait a minute, the whole thing doesn't work.
Oh,
our guest has been Dr. Carl Werner, author of Evolution, The Grand Experiment. As Dr. Werner pointed out, Pasteur proved that life cannot come from non-life, as evolution says. And yet evolution is taught as a fact of science when it contradicts science. If evolution were true, there'd be lots of new species constantly being formed. But instead, we see just the opposite. There are fewer species and more going extinct. That's proof for creation.
If a cat can't mate with a dog and give offspring, how does a transitional species come into being? It can't, and it never did.
Yeah, there's not many cogs or dats around, are there? Evolution is an idea that belongs with the other ideas of the 1800s. And please, don't try to combine the two. Evolutionists don't say anything about God, and the Bible says nothing about evolution. So make your choice. It's really between two religions. Only God can create something out of nothing. Evolution says nothing became everything. That's nonsense. Did Jesus believe in a literal Genesis account? Jesus referred to the first people, Adam and Eve, when he said, "In the beginning, God created them, male and female."
If you would like a CD copy of today's program, please ask for number 1871, The Controversy of Evolution. That's number 1871, The Controversy of Evolution. You can order a CD copy of this program from our website. Our website is issuesineducation.org. That's issuesineducation.org. Please give us a call at 928-776-0000. That's 928-776-0000. From Isaiah 45, verse 12, "Thus says the Lord, I have made the earth and created man upon it. Even my hands have stretched out the heavens, and all their host have I commanded." For Issues in Education, this has been Bob and Jerry Boyd.